Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast, bringing you the latest updates from the world of sports, gambling, and pop culture. Because you can't have a show without hot takes or a Tiger King meme these days. Know what I'm saying? Now, with over 200 episodes and ready to get after it again, here's your host, Dwayne Callender.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. Got a lot of news to go through for the NFL over the past few days. And gonna be talking a little bit of March Madness as well because the brackets are out. I'll go into a brief idea of what you should be thinking about for strategy this year. But obviously, with everything that's been going on with the ongoing pandemic, this will be a completely different tournament than most of you are accustomed to seeing. So we'll talk about that a little bit and outline some of the ground rules, so to speak, of what the changes will be. But yeah, a number of items came up in the NFL over the past week and a half, and you know, another bombshell today, but not really a bombshell because we kind of expected this just because of how poorly things broke down towards the end of the year. But Drew Brees officially announced his retirement today from the NFL after 20 years. You know, it's Hall of Fame career. There's nothing else that can be said about Drew Brees. It has been a Hall of Fame career. The problem is that it probably should have ended 2 years earlier. But again, you know, he had the ability to go out on his own terms. The Saints were going to allow him that fortitude based off of what he's meant to that franchise and the city of New Orleans. And, you know, it played out in that fashion. So, you know, with that being said, the Saints moved very quickly in announcing what the future of the franchise is by announcing a 4-year, $140 million extension for Taysom Hill. Now, at the outset, I started laughing hysterically over this because, frankly, Taysom Hill is not an NFL quarterback. He is an option QB playing quarterback and running a Wildcat system. I mean, this is a poor man's Tim Tebow. Point blank, he is going to be the worst starting QB in the NFL next season. I feel very confident in saying that. I mean, as much as I rag on Daniel Jones, Taysom Hill is going to be the worst starting NFL QB next year, including the rookies that are going to be coming out in the draft. Taysom Hill will be worse at the quarterback position than even the rookies starting out from the outset. So there's no getting around it. But, you know, from the outset of the contract, you know, you look at it and saying, you know, why is a guy that is not necessarily a, you know, even at the best case scenario, you could say is unproven. I think he's proven that he's not an NFL QB, but, you know, be that as it may, you know, why is the contract being extended with no true representation of what he could do full-time? Here's the reason why. The Saints were $16 million over the cap. It's NFL salary cap went down approximately $15.7 million down to $182.5 million, down from the $198.2 last year. Now, the reason why they're citing it, the 8% decrease, is because of COVID and the pandemic. Union reps will tell you that this is a ploy from the owners to suppress wages, but, you know, the fact of the matter is, with the salary cap decreasing this much, there's just been a spate of having to renegotiate multiple veteran deals with players to get teams back under the cap in the proper way. It's the reason why, you know, the Steelers needed to renegotiate Ben Roethlisberger's deal in a certain way. Otherwise, they had no chance of getting themselves in a good spot. I mean, the Steelers were in really bad shape until Ben Roethlisberger agreed to a new deal to restructure his deal and convert his salary into a signing bonus to give him relief. The Chiefs were in bad cap situation and cut both their starting tackles because they didn't have any funds for them, and had to restructure Patrick Mahomes' contract into becoming a mostly salary bonus deal and prorated. So, you know, there is plenty of pain going around in the NFL circles because of the amount of cap that has to be shed off of rosters. Teams that are in the most precarious positions at the moment, namely the Packers, who also made a very bizarre signing, the aforementioned Saints, the Falcons, who have a decision to make about Matt Ryan amongst other players, the Eagles, who are in salary cap hell after the acrimonious divorce slash trade of Carson Wentz, the Bears, and the Rams. Again, the Rams probably have the worst cap situation in the NFL, but, you know, they made their bed with the Goff contract and now took on the Stafford contract to basically offload the Goff contract and remanage a few things. But they're still going to be shedding payroll. But, you know, other teams are precariously close. The Giants, Lions, and the Steelers before Ben renegotiated that deal. So, you know, there were a number of teams that had to do a significant amount of changes because they were going to be way over the cap. So the Saints needed to renegotiate a couple of deals. And, you know, they kind of turned this Taysom Hill extension into essentially avoidable deal every single year of the contract. So Taysom is basically playing a year-to-year contract, and he got more upfront money in terms of a signing bonus to make it palatable for him to negotiate it, because, again, no other team is going to put Taysom Hill as their starting QB, so it's not like he had that much of a choice in the matter to begin with anyway. Yeah, so Taysom gets some more money up front. The Saints get the flexibility of being able to void his contract every year and to get themselves under the cap. So that's why the extension happened the way they did once Breeze announced his retirement today. So you have that signing. Then you have the Packers making a signing that I, for the life of me, am scratching my head over. Aaron Jones gets re-signed by the Packers at so it's a 4-year contract extension worth $48 million. Now, the issue with the Packers is, you know, they spent a second-round pick on A.J. Dillon to replace Jones at the outset when they made this made the draft last year. The whole point of not getting Aaron Rodgers a wide receiver last year was to draft A.J. Dillon because you knew you had the cap situation with Aaron Jones. You play out this entire year with Dillon being the third string running back to Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams because, you know, the thought process was you're grooming him to take over the job because Williams is a free agent. He's going to be gone. He's going to be too pricey. And Jones, you're going to let go in free agency because it was going to be too expensive to, even though Jones is only 26, re-signing running backs to long-term deals has not proven to be a viable strategy for NFL teams, given the volatility of the position and how easily players get hurt. I mean, the Ezekiel Elliott situation is the most recent example of these long-term running back contract deals blowing up on teams. Yet the Packers re-signed Jones, and as good as Jones is economically, it doesn't make any sense. Why would you spend the draft capital on AJ Dillon, who showed some signs of being very productive, to hamstring your cap situation with Jones and still not have any room to bring in additional wide receiver help for Aaron Rodgers. We're right back to the exact same problem we had at the outset with the Packers not having enough variety in their offensive attack, besides Davante Adams and the running game with Jones, because the offensive line's getting more banged up. You don't have additional help on the way there. You don't have any cap space to bring in some fresh bodies at the refresh that wide receiver core or bulk up the offensive line some more. You know, the Jones re-signing just really caught me off guard, because I really would not have seen that as a likely scenario. And again, you know, AJ Dillon is a high valued prospect, but you know, at best he's going to be a backup running back to Jones, and that's the only way you can justify the deal Jones got, is Jones has to be able to perform at a Pro Bowl level each year, because otherwise you wasted that entire capital you had available by using that first round pick on AJ Dillon that fashion. The second round pick on AJ Dillon early in the second. Jordan Love obviously was their first round pick, and again, that's another story in its in of itself for the Packers. You know, just a lot of pieces not being used at the moment, and now you've committed yourself to a flawed offensive strategy that doesn't necessarily benefit Aaron Rodgers once he goes up against elite competition. So, very curious there for the Packers, but still not the worst personnel decision I saw over the past week. Of course, the honor of terrible, terrible contracts goes to the Houston Texans, because while you can take Bill O'Brien out of the Texans, you can't take the Texans out of the Texans. I don't know, but they did two whopper terrible signings. Christian Kirksey gets signed for a 1-year deal at $4.5 million. Backup linebackers should not be at the top of your priorities, especially at $4 million for a backup linebacker, like, is bonkers. I don't even know. I had to look him up on the available linebacker list just to see where he might have been ranked, because he was so low on the list. He was ranked the 32nd best linebacker amongst free agents. Not in the league. Amongst free agents in the league. Ranked 32nd. So there were many, many, many other options available that the Texans passed on. But that's what we got. It's a very interesting decision point made there by the Texans. But that's where we're at the moment. And, you know, by all accounts, there really isn't much else to say about it other than it's a terrible signing. And about $2 million too much, but in addition to finding new ways of annoying Deshaun Watson, the Texans also signed Mark Ingram to a 1-year deal for $3 million to back up David Johnson, who's also on a terrible running back deal. Here's the thing: Mark Ingram's done, David Johnson's done. So you basically have two terrible starting running backs. I mean, Deshaun Watson is trying to get himself traded, but the Texans really have nothing for him to actually come back to at the moment in terms of what they're doing, because they don't have a solution for the wide receiver issues. They're going to be losing more guys. There's no getting around it. They don't have the money to bring back Will Fuller. even with the suspension Fuller got towards the end of the year, they don't have the money to bring him back realistically unless the suspension severely restricts Fuller's ability to get a new deal, which with another team, which I doubt. I really do doubt. Texans are an absolute mess. they're just so many things. Like, and paying $3 million for a backup running back at this stage when you're in a bad cap situation, just unbelievably dumb. For people who want to complain about J.J. Watt signing with the Cardinals, here's the thing. J.J. Watt's going to sell jerseys. Even if he doesn't do that much incrementally to make the Cardinals all that much better, which I disagree with. I think Watt provides ample pass rush, gives you backup cover in case Chandler Jones picks up another injury, because the Cardinals defense self-destructed once Chandler Jones got hurt. When Jones was healthy, the Cardinals defense was lethal. And I think when you combine Watt and Jones together as a pass rushing threat, I think they're going to be very disruptive to Seattle if Russell Wilson stays there. that's another topic, talking point that I'm not even going to be able to get to in great detail. The Rams in transition with Stafford, and then you got the 49ers that were trying to trade Garoppolo to New England, but maybe that's fallen through because Cam Newton re-signed with the Patriots to everyone's surprise. You know, there's just a lot of very, very strange things going on, but I like the Watt signing with the Cardinals just because, hey, you know, it keeps them relevant. They're going to be in prime time. They're going to sell a bunch of jerseys. If anyone is actually expecting Cliff Kingsbury to lead Arizona to deep stages in the playoffs, I got a bridge to sell them. They'll stay relevant. They'll be in the national conversation, and that's about all you're really hoping for if you're the Cardinals. You're not one of these teams that are actually expected to be championship caliber. You'll get a lot of press, but not actually championship caliber. So to me, the Watt signing makes a whole lot of sense from that standpoint. You know, be relevant, not necessarily successful, but you're going to be relevant. Meanwhile, the Texans are just circling the drain, bottom line. So, with some of these teams, you see the ones that are making smart decisions, the Buccaneers, being able to get Levante David re-signed, it's very frustrating that some of these teams are still staying excellent. Oh, actually, the second runner-up to the Texans making terrible salary cap decisions. The Bears re-signing Cairo Santos to $3 million a year when he wasn't good for the Bears. Cairo Santos has been cut 5 times in the past 3 years. You know, he played well enough last year, but he hasn't been nearly consistent enough to justify a 5-year deal as a kicker. The Bears franchise, fans are always hurt by kicking in general because of the climate. But Cairo Santos is not the answer long term. This is the money they should have been giving to Robbie Gould in the first place. Otherwise, Robbie Gould would have never left Chicago. And Robbie Gould is still a productive field goal kicker for the 49ers now. Could have been doing this all the time for Chicago. So just comical how things kind of work themselves out with these teams not learning their lesson and then making making the mistake with someone else when they get buyer's remorse over some of the decisions they made. But yeah, be that as it may, we've talked about the NFL a bit, and yeah, we're going to talk about that Russell Wilson situation, because the Russ to Chicago talk, you know, the odds lines very much shifted, which caught my attention. I just can't see that one happening. But yeah, we're going to have to talk about that one in another time, because you know, we've gone a little bit over than what I was expecting to on the NFL talk. But yeah, a lot of comings and goings in the NFL with the salary cap, and there's going to be more friction to come as teams get closer, because we got about another 4 days or so before the NFL has to get in compliance with the cap, and then we're going to see a major scramble amongst teams trying to sign quality players that are getting cut because they didn't want to renegotiate their deal. So plenty more to come, to be perfectly honest with you. All right, so NCAA brackets are out. I'm still waiting another few days because of the situation with the pandemic. Now, in order to qualify for the tournament, beyond of just getting selected by the committee, you also have to have 7 days of negative tests in a row amongst the players on the team. So we still have some teams that still haven't quite passed that barrier yet. Like you got the Kansases of the world. There were a couple other squads that pulled themselves out as well of conference tournaments. Just to be on the safe side. So, you know, I have to say that, you know, with the NCAA tournament shifting to a bubble format with the games all being in Indianapolis, you know, it basically kind of turns into a you know, no home court advantage. You got no domes. I mean, well, technically there is going to be one domed arena, but that's going to be in later rounds. But by and large, there's not going to be any of these major atmosphere events with fans, or, you know, it's going to be limited fans. You know, you're not going to have that same atmosphere of what you typically see in the NCAA tournament, where, you know, obviously, there's going to be pressure, but usually you would get more influence with fans kind of weighing on referees, the emotion of the crowd, kind of getting behind an underdog, kind of pushing them on, the team's getting a little bit tight. You're not going to get that that same level atmospheric pressure that you would see with certain fields. Especially when in certain regions, you got fans being able to travel and really boost up the numbers, depending on how close a fan base is to a particular region to travel. So I think this is going to be one of the more neutral type events, and it's actually going to favor more upsets, in my opinion. So it's going to be a little bit different approach than I would normally be comfortable with, because the way I would tell most of you, and for those of you who listened to the past editions of the podcast where I kind of cover strategies for March Madness, I would always prefer an option of the smaller your field for an NCAA bracket tournament. And by small field, I mean anything under 30 brackets. You should be more conservative. You should be picking less upsets in your bracket. Realistically, you know, even if it's only one or two per region, you know, going chalk is not a bad idea when it's a small bracket. The problem that I see with, by and large, with folks is they go too crazy on calling upsets in all the early rounds. That, you know, when those upsets don't pan out and some of those favorites keep going through and rolling through, you will never catch up the points to make up the difference. So too many folks get caught up with making the upset picks in the early rounds. It never actually pans out where, you know, you're getting the uplift of the upset. So like, yeah, you may hit on one or two of the upset picks, but if you pick like eight of them in the opening rounds, and some of you like go way out and pick like more than a dozen upsets in the opening rounds, like, you know, it just doesn't work out that way, to be honest. Now, be that as it may, this is most years. This year, I think you could get a little bit more aggressive making picks for upsets because of the neutral court. You're going to see some teams not necessarily pick it up as well as they should. And as I said, not having the large crowds, it actually favors some of the smaller schools that aren't used to having that many people, you know, watching their game, like really big crowds that you would see on nationally broadcast TV with some of these other larger conferences. So, you know, I think it does play more into the hands of upsets earlier on. Now, again, I wouldn't go too crazy over it because, you know, as I said, you're looking for the getting all four of your final four picks in. So you don't want to go too crazy because if you got too much of a random team going all the way and it doesn't pan out, you're not going to make back up those points because too many other people are going to be a little bit more consistent with the chalk picks and they're going to rack up points and you're not going to be able to make up the deficit. So you really need to have a lot of chaos if you're picking a ton of upsets and hope that you pick enough of them. But more often than not, it really does behoove you to stay a little bit more conservative. Now, as I say that, you know, because of the neutral sites, it kind of throws things off from what we're used to saying because, you know, some of the regions you don't have the home field advantage. You don't get nearly as much of a benefit with some of these groups. So I do have to say that, you know, it does turn into a little bit more of a guessing game on some of these tournament sites. And, you know, from that regard, you know, I think you can get a little bit more creative with the picks this year. Now, I wouldn't go too far overboard. And that's where, you know, again, if you want to do one region where you're getting a little bit more chaos than the others, so be it. But I wouldn't go too far out there because, again, with it being in a bubble format, it's going to be a lot more akin to what we saw in the NBA bubble where, yeah, you might get a team or two that surprises, but more often than not, the best teams are going to be the ones coming out of it. So I do see some uniformity where the top seeds, and in particular the Big Ten schools, where they had the best overall conference this year, I see those schools kind of pulling through. I don't, again, I'm going to need to do more research as to how much I'm going to play off of the Big Ten schools, but, you know, it does kind of play more, in my opinion, play more into having, you know, a few more upsets than usual earlier on, but, we're still going to be seeing a lot of familiar names towards the back end of the tournament. So, like I said, not going to go too crazy with picks, but I think you can go a little bit more aggressive with upsets than usual. It's just that most people usually go overboard, so it's like whatever you're thinking about doing, dial it back at that, and that's probably where you should be going with it, rather than going all upsets, because that's where you get yourself into trouble. So that's where we're going to leave things off for now. We'll talk a little bit more as we go into a little bit further into the week with the actual breakdown by region, but quite a bit to come. So that's going to do it all for now, and stay tuned to the individual bracket regions that'll be coming out in the next few days. So have a good one, folks, and until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all other major outlets.